the people out there who are trying to take him down are going to go after the personality of Trump, and not understanding that most people that support the president support him despite his personality, not because of it.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hello, it's Joe Peters, and I'm sitting with Josh Lewin. Josh, say hello.
Hi, Joe. Thank you for having me today.
Hey, good. I'm glad you're here. We're going to talk about solar energy and what it means to the area, and we're going to talk about single-family houses. We're going to talk about how some companies are doing it and how some people are investing in solar fields even. And, Josh, by the time 45 minutes goes by, everybody's listening is going to be an expert on this. Before we start, they've asked me to do a little bit of commercial time and the weather, so I'll do that, and we'll be right back.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and Hunted In every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and Hunted In provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
So today is Tuesday, the 17th of September. I'm sitting in scenic downtown Flemington with Josh Lewin, and it is 79 degrees. My handy-dandy Android weather forecast says we're going to go down to 54 tonight. That's great. Sleep with the windows open weather. 72 tomorrow, 46 at night. Wow, 46 tomorrow night. 72 on Thursday, 46 at night again. And then 79 on Friday, 55 at night, 86 on Saturday, 59. No rain in sight as far as I can see. And it looks like we're going to get a cool evening and very reasonable days. I think summer may be over. A few more commercials and we'll be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Hey, we're on the air. Today is the 17th of September. It is a little after 4 o'clock, and the year is 2019, and the temperature I gave you before, I'll just give you again, for what it's worth, it's 79 degrees outside. I'm sitting with Josh Lewin. Josh, say hello again.
Hi, Joe. Thank you for having me again.
So your name is L-E-W-I-N. And you are a resident of Bridgewater.
Correct. I actually was born and raised in Bridgewater, went away for college for a number of years and some other things for work. Came back to New Jersey in 1999, and have been here since.
Where'd you go to college at?
I did my undergrad at the at Jacksonville University in Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay.
And then I actually went for my MBA at Fairleigh Dickinson.
Wow. And your MBA is in business?
Yes, it's a general MBA.
General MBA. Wonderful. What did you do that concurrently, or did you do some work in between?
No, I worked in between, and I think that's very valuable because I think that when you graduate from college, you have some ideals that are fabulous and exciting, but I think that you need some real experience in the world to understand where you might want to actually be most useful.
I tend to agree with you. I think one of the things they do in Israel that I think we should do here is put the kids in the Army after high school for 2 years and then bring them back and put them in college. They appreciate it. Here we tend to go on to a party kind of thing, and there's real life out there. We've gone through a lot of discussions on this channel as to how much wasted education we have, and we don't have people to fill the jobs that we have. We're educating people the wrong way. So I think what you said you did is commendable. And how much time in between college and graduate?
I guess it was probably about 4 or 5 years.
Just enough to know.
Right, but I also started college a couple years later because at first I didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Right.
So I took some time off. I actually had some adventures, and then when I went to college, I did it in 3 years instead of four because I was very dedicated and mature enough to know what I needed to do at that point.
Sounds like a great career path. I'm in my 70s, and I still don't know what I want to do. When my kids make fun of me, they said, look, if you can get away with it, we can get away with it. So, Josh, your company name is Helios, H-E-L-I-O-S, if I'm saying it right?
That's correct, the Greek god of the sun.
Greek god of the sun, Helios Solar Energy LLC, based in Somerville, New Jersey. And it looks to me from our previous conversations like you do several things. You do individual homes, you do complexes like industrial. And then there's always those fields of solar panels. I don't know if you get to that level or not.
I was actually in a meeting this morning discussing a solar field project we started today, actually, with the site work.
Wow. So let's take the big and go to the little. Who typically puts a field in? A town?
So there's lots of different aspects that you can do in the state of New Jersey. In this case, what it is it's a private investor that owns the land. We're putting a solar field in, and then the user for the energy is across the street. I'm not going to get into who the name of the company is that our customer is, but they're going to use basically with the equivalent of a half a megawatt's worth of energy, which is what the solar field is going to produce.
Okay.
And that's going to help offset their electric usage, something good for the environment, and save them a significant amount of money every year.
Wow. And then there's a tax advantage as well.
Well, they don't actually this is a very complex deal, and a lot of solar projects, sometimes people purchase them directly themselves. Sometimes they have investors. There's a lot of Wall Street money involved in solar projects that take advantage of the tax advantages of the project and then become the power company to a host site for a number of years. And that's what actually is happening in the residential market also in New Jersey.
Wow. I once read or saw on TV one of those 60-minute shows where if you took a couple of square miles in the desert, like in outside of Vegas in Nevada, you could probably power half the country with that much solar power.
So I've seen certain things to say that. What it comes down to is, though, you have to have solar or the generation near where it's going to be used because of voltage drop and things like that. But the sun produces enough solar energy every few minutes to power the earth for an entire year. So if we could harness that, it would be fabulous.
It's amazing. I mean, if you think about it, and Marilyn and I are both into understanding the planets and whatever, the sun is eventually going to explode. And as a result, we're all hoping it doesn't happen in the next 50 to 100 years, maybe a million out. But it's getting warmer all the time, not colder. A lot of, I think, the climate change that we've seen over the last 10 or 20 years has come from the sun just getting gradually warmer, although there is a lot we can do not to do some of the things we're doing that could help as well. So it often boggles my mind as to whether or not all of the energy conservation is worth it, but I'm of a mindset that anything we can do to help ourselves and our next generation live better, that's fine. Let's do it. But the sun is getting warmer, and as a result, it's giving us more energy every year.
Well, I don't know if the sun's getting warmer. That would be something interesting for me to look into. What I have noticed is because of industrialization, we have changed the composition of our planet a little bit. There's been trends. You know, Europe was a tropical rainforest a million years ago. There was Pangaea. The Earth is constantly changing.
Right.
So who's to say that global warming wasn't an already natural occurring state? Because, you know, even the Earth every, I think, million years or half million years, it flips from north to south and things. So we have a lot of things we don't even know what the planet is capable of or has done in the past. But I would say that we have accelerated whatever the process is over the last 250 years by what we're doing. All those gases, all those chemicals, all those fumes are all on the Earth anyway. So, I mean, in some ways you can argue that it was just here. It's just a different status or state. And those are all fair arguments. What I look at renewable energy is, A, it's not very wasteful, but really there's an enormous energy, enormous environmental and economic impact that it can really make. And that's what I really focus on. It's great to do an environmental, do something conscientious for the environment and consider your neighbors and the future of other generations. But I haven't had a customer yet purchase a system because they care about a polar bear. I've only had people purchase it because it makes economic sense to them.
Well, and I think that's where it comes from. How are you going to justify it? Nobody's going to spend the money. You know, I think people had a conscious decision if I did A versus B and five polar bears died in A and none died in B, you're probably going to do B. Nobody wants to hurt polar bears just to pick on polar bears. It's an abstract. But they all want to sort of find a way to conserve money and make things more efficient. It sounds like that's what some of these large industrial tracts are doing.
Well, from the large industrial tracts to even the small residential home, everybody can play a part in it environmentally, but from an economic standpoint, those projects typically are going to give someone anywhere from a 10 to 20% rate of return on their investment.
Wow.
And that's pretty phenomenal in any market that you happen to be in. So, you know, as a person that works for me says, sunny is money. And it makes a lot of money for the people that purchase the system or own the system.
So I know when I was in technology, I always sold to the retail vertical. And I opened a lot of stores in my days. And some of them big like Walmart, super Walmart-sized stores. And I remember doing a hypermarket in Glen Burnie, Maryland. And the lights would phase on over about an hour so that they didn't spike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were trying to not only use very energy-efficient lighting, but they were trying to use the lighting in a computerized on-off fashion so that they didn't get higher energy rates. There's a lot of ways to save energy, and there's engineers that do nothing but this for a living. But I know from talking to people who have done it to their house, which I can relate to, that people have eliminated all but the $5.40 per month connectivity charge by putting solar up. Now, the solar may be $20,000 in order to do that, and you'd have to say how many years would it take of not having an electric bill to pay that back. But if you're getting tax credits on top of it, it sort of short circuits that time.
Well, I actually have a little example if you'd like to go over it for
sure.
A moment. So a typical house in New Jersey would be around a $30,000 system.
Okay.
And that $30,000 system, you would get $9,000 back from your federal taxes, dollar for dollar.
The first year?
Immediately, once the system is completed. So if you work for someone, you can go to your HR department and say, you know, I'm going to pay $9,000 in federal taxes this year through my solar system, so I'd like to put that right in my paycheck, and you can capture it immediately and things. So anyway, you have a $30,000 system. You get $9,000 off. It's really a $21,000 system because you're paying the taxes anyway. It's irrelevant.
Right.
When you have the $21,000, that system is going to produce approximately $1,800 in electric savings a year, and it's going to produce approximately $2,300 a year in something called SRECs. SRECs are solar renewable energy credits mandated by the state of New Jersey, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like a carbon tax. When you combine those two, that's $4,100 worth of revenue you get every year from your system. You divide that in the 21,000, it just becomes 5.12 years until you paid off the entire system. And then you're going to capture $4,100 worth of revenue for another 20 years.
Right.
And that's without even factoring in how much your electric is going to go up over those 25 years. So the savings is actually even greater than that, but I like to be conservative in my estimates. So if you can show me where you can get a rate of return that good somewhere else, I'd love to invest.
So do people typically take it and pay it off over 5 years, or do they pay it off for 10 or 20 years and start using the savings?
So it depends on which market you're talking about.
Right.
The New Jersey residential market is primarily actually a lease system.
Yep.
And that's an interesting concept to me. Solar really has really done very well with this type of lease program. So there was this gentleman that founded a lease idea, and the reason why he founded it was his thought was, and I quote, "I think that customers really don't want to pay for stuff." And so he wanted to know how he could get solar on homes and businesses, and if they don't want to pay for stuff, they don't have the tax equity, if that becomes too cumbersome for them, why don't we offer that to them for free, which is what most people hear the ads on television and on the TV and the radio and the cold calls. It's no money down, and that's true, but you don't own the system.
Right.
Wall Street owns the system. Wall Street is now becoming your power company, and they're selling it to you at a discounted rate for the next 20 to 25 years, and there is some significant savings because you might save $50 a month, even $100 a month off your electric bill for nothing out, and that's great. But they're making all that money on you.
Yeah.
And so if you purchased it, in 5 years it's paid for itself and you're banking all that money. So it just depends on what people want and what their needs happen to be.
So I know I had one fellow who was over in Somerset, New Jersey, and he was realizing about $2,000 a year in savings.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was $200 a month, so it was $2,400 a year.
He had a very large house.
He was an engineer, and he over-engineered the whole thing.
Okay.
So what we were able to do when we sold his house, and he bought it and paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
He was just of a European state of mind. I'm not going to finance it. He bought it and paid for it. We didn't talk about the credits or anything. But when we went to sell the house, he had, at that point, about a $20,000 system on his roof that was now paid for. And we wanted to put that into the value of the house because it did add to the value. And a rule of thumb is as long as you can't see it from the street, it adds to the value. If you can see it from the street, it may or may not. It depends. It's subjective. If everybody in the neighborhood's got one, it's probably not going to hurt. If you're the only one, somebody might say, I don't want that in the front of my house. So we took 7.5 years or 90 months, and we added 90 months times $200 a month, which is $18,000. To the property face of this house, and we got that price. It was a pretty well accepted. The thing that we never looked at when we went into that was, okay, what about the tax advantage and the SRECs and the whatever? This is just savings,
right?
Dollar savings. I'm not paying the electric bill anymore. But there's more savings than that, and it might have been worth even more than that to the buyer. The issue was twofold. One was, did people really want this? Because it's not something they're thinking about when they go buy a house. But energy consumption is something they're thinking about. So if you can show them that I was spending $200 a month more on the average, and now I'm saving that $2,400 a year, and as a result of that, the house is going to cost you a little more because that's built into the price, not the whole thing, but it does add to the value of the price. There's the argument of, well, what happens when it becomes obsolete? What happens when better technology comes along? And that's one I've never been able to wrap my hands around. This, they'll typically last 10 years, according to what I know.
Well, let's look at that. First of all, when you say that, are you talking about an existing system on a home and someone's purchasing it and they want to look at the next best thing? Or are you talking about someone that hasn't done anything about solar because they're waiting for the next best thing? Which one is
it? I'm thinking the person that's bought it, and eventually, like everything, it's going to wear out.
Sure. So what you would more than likely do is the life of the solar system is 25 years.
Okay.
That comes from manufacturer warranties. It's not even my warranty or me just saying it. All the manufacturers give you that warranty. But it's going to produce 80% of what it produces typically today because there's something called degradation, just like any light fixture or anything else. So that's normal. I would not suggest changing your system for something better because economically there's no reason to. It's doing what it should be doing. It's producing what it should. Now, the people that sit there and tell me, oh, I'm going to wait for the new technology because it's going to get better. Well, I've been doing solar now for 12 years, and there have been improvements, but nothing so astronomical. No one's reinvented the wheel to the point that I could say what I put in 10 years ago is significantly less quality or less of – it produces significantly less than what I put in today. It's reasonable in the comparison and things. So some of those people that tell me, oh, I'm going to wait, I said, well, I guess you like riding a horse. Or you like sitting in that buggy instead of getting in the car. Because there's sooner than later, you're all going to get into a car. Sooner or later, everyone is going to have solar on their house, one way or the other. It may take about 20 years until that happens.
Right.
But the state has actually passed some legislation that they want us to have 50% renewable energy by 2030, which is only 10 and a half years from now, and 100% by 2050. And they've given some strong incentives for people to do that.
So it sounds to me like as technology improves, it gets more aesthetically pleasing, too. It's not as big as it used to be. I've even heard that some of the solar panels may be built into the roofing materials going forward.
So that's the golden grail, right? Everybody wants that roof to be integrated with solar panels.
Right.
Since I started, it's always a year away. I haven't seen it yet. I've seen many companies like Dow and things like that trying to produce this. No one has been able to do something that is cost-effective and reliable yet. So when it happens, that's great.
Yeah.
I'm not waiting for it, though, and things like that. The technology has changed. Things are a little bit – there's better power density and things. But overall, it's still the same. A solar panel is not significantly different than the very first ones invented in the 50s. The ones that, you know, were on Genesis, the satellite that went out past Pluto and things, that's still basically the same technology.
Hmm.
What's happened is now we have data monitoring, we have more integration, more intelligence to the inverters and things like that that integrate with your electrical system. That's mostly where the technology has changed. But otherwise, a solar panel is still a solar panel.
How did you get into the solar business?
So I've always been a little bit of a tree hugger, not too much, but I've always been environmentally conscious and wanted to make a difference. When I had my first child, I definitely wanted to lead by example because it's one thing to just say things. It's another thing to do something about it. And about 14 years ago, I saw that New Jersey was getting more and more involved in solar. I left my company that I was working at the time in 2007, so 12 years ago, and started my company. I actually had to first travel for the first 6 months all around the United States going to solar classes, mostly out west, because it really wasn't something that was very big or popular out here. even though New Jersey was one of the best states and still is in the country for solar, we were always way ahead of the curve, just right next to California for the last 15 years, 20 years. But because I saw it as an emerging market, I believed in what we were doing, and I have a very strong construction background, it was an easy fit for me.
Okay.
And I really enjoy it.
Wow. So are there areas of the country that are hotbeds for renewable energy?
So there's 10 states that are really, really moving forward. New Jersey is now ranked, I want to say, 5th to 6th. California, obviously, is number one, but they also have one of the biggest economies in the world, so it's hard to compete against California. Even though about 7-8 years ago, New Jersey did beat California on a couple quarters on installations. North Carolina is a state that has actually just exploded over the last 5 years.
Hmm.
One of the reasons why is North Carolina today could build 3 nuclear power plants just to satisfy the new growth that has moved to wow. North Carolina. So solar is an easy transition for them. They just have so much need, period, of new generation, that a friend of mine is putting in 8,000 panels a day with his company that he owns down in North Carolina. So it's an amazing boom there. And other states are coming along as well. New Jersey and Massachusetts are probably equal, and I would say our market is very similar to the Massachusetts market. We've mimicked each other over the last decade.
So the panel has to face south to catch the maximum sun, and at a certain angle it's more efficient than others. So there's an optimum direction and angle, I would think.
So there absolutely is. There's an ideal south with the pitch or the angle of the panel would be actually what our latitude is. That's for the most ideal situation. But that's not practical. It's very unlikely that you're going to find most systems designed that way just because buildings and homes are not set in that direction. The roof might not have that angle and things. So that's actually a good point. When I first started, solar is based on something called kilowatt hours on DC power, basically. And a lot of people still sell it that way. I don't sell it that way. It doesn't matter if I put one panel on your roof or 1,000 panels on your roof. What matters is what the system produces, which is kWh. And that's what your electric bill is used, and you know how your bill is kWh. That's a quantifiable way. So now we actually have some installations where we put solar panels on the north face of a roof. We had to add extra panels to make up for the difference in production, but it still would produce just as much as the south. Maybe we had to add an extra 10% in modules and things like that to equal it. So I don't want people to feel that they're pigeonholed, oh, my house isn't good because it doesn't face south. It could be facing east, west, north, or south. It doesn't really matter. There may be a point that it doesn't make economic sense to put it on certain applications, but usually almost any building is suitable for solar.
So is solar bigger than wind at this point?
No, actually, wind nationally is still probably a little bit bigger.
Is it really?
But part of the reason is, though, when you build a windmill, it's equivalent of maybe doing 100 houses in one spot.
Okay.
So you can make a great impact in one moment, you know. And things.
So wind always, because I sold electricity as a multiple level thing years ago, and they were big into wind. And you could actually buy green versus non-green. It cost a little more to be ecologically correct. And the bottom of the propeller and is 180 foot off the ground, and the whole span is up into like 250 feet. And it was sort of not good for birds, let me put it that way. High-flying birds, anyway. Most birds don't fly 180 feet high. Talk to me about what solar does ecologically. Is there anything it doesn't do right that people use as a trade-off?
Well, okay, let's talk about that. So solar has a carbon footprint like anything that's manufactured.
Right.
So it's not like this is just a pristine piece of technology. When you look at just manufacturing a solar panel, it takes probably about 3 to 4 years between the solar panel, the inverters, and all the equipment to absorb that carbon footprint it was just to manufacture it.
Okay.
Otherwise, though, solar is pretty benign. It really doesn't do very much to the building. It doesn't affect it in a negative way. It's just really putting glass on your roof is what it comes down to.
Wow. And I see some people put it on the ground behind their house. Why is that?
Well, maybe the roof isn't appropriate. Maybe their roof needs to be replaced, but they're not ready to do it. Or structurally, the building can't sustain it. Maybe they don't like the aesthetics of it, and they want to put it on the ground and maybe plant some shrubbery behind it. There's many reasons why you might do that.
I know when we first started talking, I was thinking about it, and I got off track. 5 years ago, we had somebody who was leasing land to solar farms. Mm-hmm. And even in retail, most people don't realize when you put up a Walmart, they're not buying the land. They're leasing the land probably 50 years.
Right.
At the end of the 50 years, you know the store's not going to be there anymore. Nobody's thinking that far in advance. Is solar sort of the same way that nobody's thinking that far in advance? 10 years as far as I know. You say they have a 25-year-old. Your lifespan, but I would think things do get more efficient over time.
Well, for one, you're not going to spend all this money and then throw it out in 5 or 10 years.
Right.
So it's going to more than likely run the current life cycle that it's supposed to have, 25 right. years. Now, when you come into the residential market, I think a lot of people don't really consider that very much. They might only consider that in 25 years the roof has to be replaced, the solar will be removed at the same time. But when you talk about the commercial market, that's a very big part of the project. So let's say, for example, where someone is leasing the solar, they don't own the solar whatsoever, and Wall Street, again, owns the system, is now going to become their power company for the next 25 years at a discounted rate. Well, they usually put provisions in that in 25 years the user could buy the system for a dollar, so now it's their problem.
Right.
Or that they may have something in the contract that the owner of the system, the Wall Street bankers, will have to pay to have everything removed. But typically there is usually something in some sort of language in the contract for that.
Interesting. So talk about SRECs. It seems to me sometimes in history SRECs are worth more money than other times. They're renewable energy certificates, but they're also renewable. The plan for what the SRECs are worth is worth that plan for a period of time, and it has to be reapproved. And hopefully made better. But
so that's a great question. SRECs came out a number of years ago, and at the time they were coming out, and they were $650 a credit. Now they're trading at around $230, $235 a credit, which we actually sell the credits for our customers if they would like us to. Now, with that in mind, the market did crash almost after about a year of it being year to 2 years, it was around. It went from $650 down to about $120 or so. And that was because of many things. One, there was an over supply of SRECs. So basically how they projected each quarter and for the years, they were building more solar than could be absorbed from that financial standpoint, not from an electric standpoint. Part of that was because the economic downturn, and every electrician and every contractor that had no work 10 years ago jumped into solar, which was very bad for the industry, quite honestly, because there was a lot of people that weren't very serious about it doing subpar work and just trying to make a living, which I understand, just trying to make a living and things like that. But that crashed the market. New Jersey then put in some basically like a floor and a ceiling kind of price under Christie, and that salvaged the market and brought it up into the $250, $230 market. But Christie actually robbed our fund of over $80 million once he became governor, and that's also part of the reason why the SREC market crashed. So there's lots of different contributing factors to how it went from $650 down to in the hundreds and now back up to the 250s. The current market is scheduled to close, actually. So all the products that are getting built right now are grandfathered in, and around March of next year, the governor is going to unveil his final new plan. And there's going to be something, instead of an SREC, it's going to be very similar to an SREC, and that's what's going to be going forward. And they used to last for 15 years. Now they're only going to last for 10.
So that's far enough. I mean,
sure.
People can't see past 10 years typically. Let's talk about how a system works. You put $30,000 in your system, get a $9,000 tax rec. So you're laying out $21,000, probably needs to be financed. There's various plans. Somebody will put it up there for you and give you free electricity or something till it's, or a discount off your electricity till it's paid for. But how does the system, I always heard, and I'm sure this was not exactly how it worked, that if you generated, you'd use electricity on a cloudy day. Mm-hmm. And on a sunny day, you generate electricity. And if you generated more than you use, it would make your meter run backwards.
Correct.
Does that really happen? Or
it really does.
It does. Okay.
So that's actually one of the favorite things for homeowners that I love to show them. So unfortunately, more and more houses have digital electric meters now.
Right.
But the ones that had the disc meters, as soon as we finished that project and we turned it on, I'd bring the homeowner back and let them watch that disc meter actually run backwards. Huh. And everybody would smile.
I didn't realize it really did that. I thought it was just a euphemism or whatever.
No, it actually would. Wow. Now, the digital, you can't see it running backwards and things like that, so it's not as exciting. But think of sort of think of solar as tide coming in and out is probably the simplest solution. It's a nice sunny day today. We're producing more power than we might be consuming at that moment. We send that excess energy that the building is not using at that moment back to the grid. Your meter runs backwards. Your neighbor down the street is using it. Nobody knows where it came from. It doesn't really matter. It just goes right into the grid seamlessly. Now you come home later tonight, you decide to have a big celebration because it's a great day today, you have a bunch of people over, you end up using more power, and then you end up using all this power and you end up using that credit basically back.
Right.
So it kind of becomes a wash. And you have to look at solar over an annual year because obviously the longest day of the year, we're going to produce the most energy. The shortest day of the year, we're going to produce the least amount of energy, regardless of cloudy weather, sunny weather, and so forth. It comes down to sun hours, concentration of the sun, and things like that. What we use is a program called PV Watts, which is a national program based by the government that takes the historical weather patterns of our area and every area in the United States over the last 100 years, and it can predict how many sun hours we're going to get on a daily basis. And it's actually been very accurate within about 1% of what it should be. So our systems, we then measure that, you know, we apply that program to our system, comes up with a calculation of what the system is going to produce, and usually within 1% of that number is what it turns out over the year.
So, and it's not as simple as making the meter run backwards. Some of it goes into a battery system.
So it can do that. And I think battery systems are the future.
Okay.
But I don't touch them today. So just for example, that fire that happened on that diving boat in California, that was created by a lithium-ion battery, more than likely. So that's what type of battery systems that they're using right now for solar. I don't want to attach that to your house because I'm just still concerned about those types of fires. You can't put them out. Lithium-ion batteries actually burn so hot that they create their own oxygen, and it's impossible to put them out until they've spent their fuel. So in about 2 to 3 years, storage is going to be an enormous part of the solar market in New Jersey, but it's not quite there yet. I give a lot of credit to those early adopters. They're kind of on the bleeding edge of technology today. I don't want to subject my customers to that.
So the average system is like the tide going out, the tide coming in. There's no battery saving some for when it gets dark.
Right. So you're basically going to overproduce during the day to use up what you need at night.
Right.
And it's going to go over, you know, some months you're going to have a little bit of an electric bill. Yeah. Some months you may have a credit. It'll just depend on
but
the year.
If we were to use this in its simplistic forms, you spent $30,000. You got roughly a $9,000 tax credit. So you spent $21,000. You're now, with enough efficiency, just paying a connectivity charge, like less than $10 to the electric company, and you're getting free electric. But there's other savings besides the free electric. Now, I'm in a townhouse, and my bill for last month, August, probably the worst month of the year, was like $233.
Mm-hmm.
So during the winter, my bill never goes below maybe $90. So I'm probably on an average 12 months spending, I don't know, $1,500, $1,600, $1,800 on electricity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that minus the $10 a month, whatever connection charge, is the most I can save. That's not nowhere near. You need the tax benefit and the SRECs in order to justify that system. You can't justify it just on usage.
So that's why Florida doesn't happen to be a solar gold mine. Everybody says to me, why isn't solar great down in Florida? Well, the electric rate in Florida is 10 cents a watt. Here it's 18 cents. They have no SREC program or anything like that. So their systems are going to take 10 years to break even, if not longer. Why would you economically invest in something like that at that time? It has to make sense. That's why New Jersey and Massachusetts are very similar. We're both expensive states. Our electric rates are very high, and we came up with this SREC program.
Why are our rates high?
Rates are high in this area because, actually, I don't have an exact answer on that, but I would assume the main reason why is because of densely population, because no one wants a power plant in their backyards. We have power plants coming from Ohio, from you know, western Pennsylvania and things like that, feeding a lot of our state. And I think that's one of the main significant reasons that are driving our electric rates. Where down south, they may have a power plant more frequently in the area because it's rural, and no one's going to complain in a planning board meeting that the power plant is 10 miles from their house and such.
And where does nuclear power fit into this? Is that still being done anywhere in the country?
So I know that there is still some things going on with nuclear. Nuclear is actually, if it's done right, considered very safe. I don't want to get into a philosophical debate about that and things, but there's a lot of good things about it. The big thing that solar has done is it's basically helped decommission a lot of coal plants, and same with natural gas. Natural gas has also done that as well. So coal is out. It's never coming back. Even though we are the Saudi Arabia of coal, it's over for us on that aspect. But nuclear is still going to be a big part of it. Natural gas is becoming a growing part. Solar and wind, hydropower, geothermal, there's lots of options.
Now, needless to say, the coal miners that are listening aren't happy to hear that, but they know this. This is not a surprise.
Correct.
We're diminishing our use in coal. What percentage of energy still comes from coal?
I don't have that number.
Yeah, but it's less every year, probably.
Oh, it's significantly less every year.
And is the hybrid happening between solar and wind, or are they usually separate sources?
Well, so wind is really more in the Midwest. You know, we have some wind here. You're going to see it off the coast in the near future. You see it down in Atlantic City. But we're a very dense state, so it's going to be very difficult to implement wind here because who wants to look at the windmill?
Right.
When you're out in the Midwest on those farms that, you know, you don't see anything, you don't see your neighbor for 10 miles, what do you care if you have a windmill there?
And I'll tell you, this is why when you said California was really ahead of the curve. We drove from Las Vegas over to L.A., and as you came over that mountain range, there were thousands of windmills up there.
But there's also a major wind channel in that area, and I think that's one of the reasons why it happens to be there.
And what you say is true, because I know when I called on Hertz, which was in Oklahoma City, and I had to drive from there down to Dallas one time, and in effect, you traverse through about four different geographical whatever, but it was always windy. And they said, you know, the local joke is that the state, Oklahoma, I guess, I don't know what's above it, but one state sucks and everyone blows. That was their joke.
Right.
But it was always windy. And the wind not only led to probably a good place to put up wind turbines, but it also led to other catastrophic things like tornadoes and whatever. You're in Tornado Alley at the same time. So I don't think people in New Jersey realize how fortunate they are that you don't have to listen for the air raid sirens at night like you do in places like Indianapolis. I've been there.
Right.
And it's just that the different parts of the country have different weather channels like wind.
Absolutely. And sun even. I mean, you look at Colorado. It's sun, even though it snows a lot, it's a very sunny state.
Yeah.
300 days of sun typically a year.
So you said before there's like 110,000 installations.
There's 113,872 installations as of July this year.
So what percentage of the homes in New Jersey would that represent?
So it's primarily residential housing. I don't have the exact number. I tried to look it up and I couldn't find an accurate number. But on average, New Jersey is putting in around 650 homes a month.
Wow. 650 a month. So that's 677,000 a year.
Well, we've been doing this now for about 15 years in New Jersey. And New Jersey's been a phenomenal leader throughout the whole time. Still is.
So if somebody wanted to take a look at doing their house, they could give you a call. This is Josh Lewin, L-E-W-I-N. At Helios, H-E-L-I-O-S, Solar Energy, LLC. And his phone number is 908-526-0681. If you want to read more about it, it's helios-nj.com. Probably could read to your, to the cows come home. Although my kid says, what does that mean, the cows come home? It's just an expression we don't use anymore. How do they get started? What typically drives a person? I mean, I know what drove the guy in Somerset. He was an engineer. Mm-hmm. Engineers think differently, okay? He wanted to save money. He wanted to be ecologically
conscious.
He wanted to do the right thing, and he drove an electric car. And, you know, on down the line. So let's put those people aside because they're what you really call a tree hugger.
Sure.
What then is the next biggest reason a person's looking to do solar?
To save money.
Okay.
To either create revenue for themselves and their family or their business, or just to save money. Simple as that. It all comes down to.
And what kind of a person spending $200 a month on a house, what kind of money can they save?
Well, if they purchase a system, they can save the $200 a month or $195.
Right.
If they lease a system, they might save $40, $60 a month, which is significant for not doing anything. But again, that leasing company is going to make all that money for them over the years. They'll have a small savings, you know, $600 a year or so, which for doing nothing is not bad.
It's not a bad savings. I know I sold, I won't mention the company's names, but I sold for a company that did not only green solar, but they sold electricity cheaper than your electricity company. And we were saving people an average of 8%, but it turned to 6 and 4 and 2, and then some months it wasn't even saving any money. And I said to myself, this is nowhere where I think I can earn a living going forward, and I dropped that. It was a part-time thing anyway.
Well, the big thing I tell people is this. You're purchasing your electricity at a fixed price today for the next 25 years. Electric rates have historically gone up 3.5% a year. With the new legislation that the governor had just passed last year, the utility companies are going to be allowed to increase the rate by 7% a year. When you think about that and compound it, more than likely in about 8 to 9 years, your electric rate is going to completely double.
Wow.
So you're hedging against that. And that's only in 8 years. When I'm talking 25 years, I would imagine your rate is going to go up 4 to 5, 6 times.
Right.
So why not buy it at a fixed price today? And that's when you really are going to make that money in the long term. But you have to be a long-term investor.
But I think most people, even the ones who can afford to do it, don't think that long.
I think that's a big reason why that gentleman said that he thinks people just don't want to pay for stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and it's unfortunately a short-sighted part of it, but it is what it is. And how I look at the leases, the purchases, whatever it might be, however people get to renewable energy and whatever is their trigger method, you know, whatever that makes them make that decision, it still ultimately is good, period.
So we get to a not-for-profit. I know the answer already, but I want the audience to hear. And I'll give you a good example. Raritan Valley Community College, it's a not-for-profit. Mm-hmm. So if they put up solar, they can't take the depreciation.
Correct.
But that doesn't mean the depreciation isn't worth something to somebody else, that they couldn't sell the depreciation.
Well, you can't really sell the depreciation that way. So what we've done, we actually do nonprofits, and we've done that for synagogues, churches, and we actually did it for a place called Alternative Inc. in Raritan, New Jersey, in Somerset County, right by the Somerville Circle. And in that case, someone, a private investor, owns a system, used all the tax advantages themselves, bought the system for them, and then gave them a discounted rate for the next 25 years for the electricity, giving them an option in year 10 to buy the system out for 20%, year 15 for 10%, and year 20, I think it was, for a dollar, is ultimately what that contract came out to be. And what's great for the nonprofit is now they were able to take that money that they are saving each month from the electric, and in this case, I want to say, I don't remember exactly, but I want to say they're saving around $400 or $500 a month. They can now put that money right back into their program. And that's what they ultimately need to be doing. We're working with some other nonprofits. It's a long process dealing with nonprofits and going in front of their board and things like that. But we have a few other nonprofits that we're working with right now to help them. You know, one happens to be a school and things like that. And, again, they can't take advantage of their tax credits, but we can help them in other ways.
So you said that it's going to ramp up between now and 2050 to where we have to be 100% non-coal-burning or non...
Well, renewable energy is what it means.
Okay.
So that's going to be geothermal, that's going to be hydro, wind, solar.
Renewable energy.
Renewable energy.
Okay. So renewable means God's giving it to us.
Right. Like geothermal is renewable energy because that's using the Earth's temperature to heat or cool your building.
And I have people still putting that in. That's a great way to, you know, you start with like 54 degrees and you either heat it or cool it. It's a lot better than starting at zero.
It's a significant difference.
And it's easier to do before you build a house than after you build the house. But it's still, so there's lots of things here, renewable energy-wise, that eventually will eliminate all carbon energy from being used?
I think you can't say ever eliminating all of anything, I wouldn't say, but it'll significantly reduce that, make a big impact.
But what he's saying, the governor, I'm calling it a he, it could be a she going forward, is we want 100% renewable energy by 2050. That means it's all wind, solar, geo, hydro.
Nuclear also.
And nuclear.
More than likely.
Nuclear fits under renewable. Okay. It's kind of bad for, you know, we had a couple of, you know, the Three Mile Island thing, that's a long time ago. Most people probably don't remember it. But most people do remember the tsunami in Japan. We tend to put power plants in really ugly places, and they weren't well thought out. And then the Long Island thing has always been a catastrophe, that it is a bottleneck. You can't get around it if you ever have a nuclear kind of thing. But
well, you see, the problem that we have right now is the governor hasn't been clear on what his plan is going to be, and that's what we're waiting for in March. Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things going on, a lot of moving parts. The final plan will be unveiled then, and then we'll know exactly how it's going to go.
See, I'm not sure. I don't think it's he doesn't know what he wants to do. He just doesn't know how he's going to get it through.
Sure.
I think the same thing's happened on a national level. Both sides are right. Both sides are wrong. I mean, it's just ridiculous what we do half the time. But we're not getting things done, and that's the hard part. I'm sitting here in downtown Flemington, and the same thing's going on. There's a big argument whether or not we should put a $100 million project in or save all the bricks on a building that's falling down anyway. And it's obvious where my mind is at, but I do understand the other side. This is the town where Lindbergh was tried. This town has a lot of history, and it is the county seat for a large area. As a matter of fact, most people don't realize that Hunterdon County at one point encompassed Morris County and Mercer County. So it was like the Wild West of New Jersey out here at one point. There were two counties broke off over time. But at the same time, I think we all believe we can do a better job conserving energy and making the world a better place to live. And it seems like one of the places that's natural.
And this is a simple way to do it.
Great. Great. Josh, I appreciate you coming on. Hopefully people have learned a little from you, if not a lot. And once again, it's H-E-L-I-O-S, Helios Solar Energy, LLC. Helios is the Greek
God of the Sun.
God of the Sun. He's based in Somerville. His site is heliosnj.com, H-E-L-I-O-S.com. His phone number, 908-526-0681.
Actually, it's 526-0081.
00. My handwriting is not the best.
I apologize to correct
526-0081, Josh Lewin. My name is Joe Peters. You'll get all my contact information in about a minute on my last commercial. And I thank you for tuning in. Next week, I'm not sure who's coming on as I sit here next week, but I'm sure we'll have somebody interesting. And what I try to do on this show is talk a little about real estate, a little about seniors, and a little about what's going on in our area in general. So I thank you for tuning in. I'm going to put my commercial on one more time, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Good. Good to see you, Josh.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Once again, Joe Peters signing out. It's September 17th, 2019. See you next week.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump's former campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, is testifying before a Democratic-led House Judiciary Committee on Tuesday. The committee is investigating President Trump's alleged efforts to get in the way of a federal probe into Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election. Republican Congressman from Georgia, Doug Collins, is not a fan of the hearings.
Let's read the Mueller report for audiobook. That's what we've become. We had Mr. Mueller here. Had a long day of it. Judging by all accounts, it didn't go real well.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is traveling to Saudi Arabia just days after an attack on an oil facility there. Pompeo will spend a few days in Saudi Arabia and the UAE to discuss the United States' response to the attacks. And your final numbers on Wall Street, the Dow is up 34 points to close at 27,111. NASDAQ gained 32. This is USA Radio News.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife Jenny was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
The drone strikes in eastern Saudi Arabia over the weekend are having an impact on your price at the pump, as USA Radio Network's John Clemens explains.
Iranian-backed Houthi rebels in Yemen have claimed responsibility for the attacks that caused a production drop of 5.7 million barrels of crude oil products. That's over 5% of the world's daily supply. Patrick DeHaan of GasBuddy.com tells us, get ready to pay more at the pump.
I would expect that in the days ahead, gas prices will likely advance 15 to 30 cents per gallon on average. It's going to be a few pennies per day for the next 1 to 2 weeks.
It's been estimated it'll take weeks to repair the Saudi oil fields that were damaged by the drone attacks. In order to stabilize oil prices, President Trump opened the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
Tropical storm warnings have been issued as Tropical Depression Imelda heads towards Texas. The Houston area and other places in eastern Texas are bracing for up to 18 inches of rain. This is USA Radio News.